Roshi. Good evening, everyone. I'm not sure, but it might be the f first time that I actually turned to Roshi and said, I can do the talk if you want. Not sure if that ever happened that way. I guess the reason being was that I had a rather strong experience last week, and it has stayed with me, and I'm still processing what's in there, and I'd like to share that with you, and that might echo something for you, in you. So I went to London last week for a seminar, and I was supposed to, just before the seminar, meet with a friend, and that didn't turn out to be possible. So I had a couple of hours to spare in London before the seminar started. And I had heard about Denmark Street, which is a famous street in London for guitars. They have lots of guitars and guitar shops there. So I thought I might check it out and see what's there. And I entered in a couple of shops, and then I ended up in one where it was on three, four floors in one of these old London houses, and lots of great stuff. I love guitars, and there were lots of great stuff. And as I was going around the shop, I took pictures and sent that to Freddy, João, and Tomas, with whom we share a WhatsApp group on guitar, dedicated on guitar. And we meet every week to discuss guitars. We've done that, what, three, four times already? And I was getting very excited about what I was seeing. And on the top floor, I saw on the wall a guitar, an electric guitar from the same brand that I already have in acoustic. And I was very surprised because that brand doesn't, I didn't know they were making electric guitars. So I went downstairs and asked the guy what was the story about this guitar. And the guy said, oh, it's actually a rarity. This brand only made electric guitars for a very short while, for a very short t period of time, a couple of years, and they stopped in 92 or something. So I was like, all right. And so I said, can I try it? I took a picture of it, sent to these guys, and said, what do you think? And I tried it. It was really beautiful, beautiful sound. The design was, I thought, was very, very much sublime. And then I received a Thomas from, and so I asked for the price. So the guy gave me the price, and then I WhatsApped, and Thomas answered, and he said, well, for that price, I think I would rather go for Les Paul. And Les Paul is a very famous guitar, also one of these iconic guitars. And there were Les Pauls all around me, actually, that I could try. So then I thought, oh my God, maybe Thomas is right. I should try Les Paul. Maybe I should go for Les Paul. And then I thought, but really, should I even consider buying a new guitar? Already have, I don't even know how many guitars I have, probably nine already. So I thought, why do I want a new guitar, and can I afford a new guitar? And I thought, no, I can't afford a new guitar. And then the guy said, well, I can give you a nice price for it. And then I got all excited and all things, were piling up in me, and I didn't know what to do. And then there were all these Les Paul around me, and then I said, "Can I try this one?" And so the guy said, "Sure, try this one." But then there was also another one, and then I thought, "Oh, maybe I should try the other one too." And then I didn't know where I was after a moment. So, and the guitar had a little, something was wrong with the microphones, and the guy said, "Well, my tech is going to take care of it." So he took away the guitar and came back 10 minutes later, so I couldn't really leave. It was kind of rude, and he was doing that for me, so I waited for a while and tried more guitars in the meantime, or looked at more guitars. And finally, the guy came back, and so I tried the guitar again, and then I thought, well, Delphine, my wife, is not going to be happy if I come back with a new guitar. She's going to think again. So I finally left the shop, and I felt drunk. I felt agitated. I felt as if I felt a sense, I had a sense of dizziness of what went on in that shop. It totally excited me, and then I walked a little bit further. I reached the end of the street, and there was another shop. So I entered in the last shop, and I thought, no, I can't take it anymore. So I left without trying anything. It's like, and then I thought, what on earth am I doing? So I sent a message to my guitar Dharma circle friends, and I wrote, "Well, I believe I know where Mara lives. It's on Denmark Street." So Mara is the devil in our tradition. It's the figure of reactivity. And it just happened that during the seminar that I was part of, it was on Buddhism, secular Dharma, and we did talk about Mara, actually. And so I remembered that I remembered that what came back to me were the last words of the Buddha that I mentioned at the summer retreat. The last words of the Buddha are in one translation of Stephen Batchelor is, "Trade the path with care." You find that quote in you find that passage in a sutta that talks about the last days of the Buddha. It's called the Maha Parinibbana Sutta. So the discourse on the great discourse on the extinction of the Buddha. And there are several translations of that quote. I checked what were the other translations of that. The oldest, which is kind of unclear from Maurice Walsh, it's, "Then the Lord said to the monks, 'Now, monks, I declare to you, all conditioned things are of nature to decay. Strive on untiringly.'" Then later on, Bhikkhu Sujato, translated by, "Conditions fall apart, persist with diligence. Conditions fall apart, persist with diligence." And Stephen Batchelor's translation is, "Things fall apart, trade the path with care." And what struck me and what that whole experience in the guitar shop reminded me is that this word of either care or diligence that is mentioned is this word apamada. And Freddie knows that very well, and I'll tell you why. Apamada, so that is translated by diligence, that's a Pali term. And in Pali, there's this strange thing that when you want to mention a quality that needs to be cultivated, they mention the opposite of the quality that should not be cultivated. So the A is the negative. And pamada means intoxication, drunkenness, what did I find other? Yeah, pride, conceit, sexual excess. So what is the opposite of intoxication? Non-intoxication. And what is it when how does it feel when you're in a state of intoxication? How do you feel, and what is the quality that you want to develop that is the opposite of that feeling? There is in the Dhammapada, which is one of the short famous texts that Freddie translated from Pali. Nobody knows that, but he did the work and he sent me the translation. And there's the second chapter is called Appamattavagga. Vagga is the way. So, and sometimes it's translated as diligence. Again, we find that word. And so Freddie translated that by non-intoxication. So it goes like this: if you translate this word appamada by care, the way Stephen Batchelor does that, it says in the Dhammapada, care is the path to the deathless. Carelessness is the path to death. The caring do not die, the uncaring are as already dead. And in Freddie's translation, the French translation is la non, so the non-intoxication is the path to non-death. Intoxication is the path to death. Those who are non-intoxicated do not die. The intoxicated are as dead. That's my English translation of Freddie's translation of the Pali text.
Excuse me, Joy, can you repeat that just one time, please?
With a care or with a Freddie's translation?
Freddie's
All of it.
translation.
Freddie's translation is the non-intoxication is the path to non-death. Intoxication is the path towards death. Those who are non-intoxicated do not die. Those who are intoxicated are like dead. I hope I do justice to your work, Freddie. So it was very interesting, all that, because this whole idea of being intoxicated, so I thought about that, because really that was the state of total disarray and feeling lost that I felt when I got out of that. There was a sense of, I could feel the reactivity, I could feel how much the craving had been called on me. I could see how strong I was reacting. And it was like really a burning desire to have something else. And so another image that came to me was that notion of reactivity, that notion of reactivity. The image also that is being used in Buddhism is the fire, the image of fire. Something is burning. And the way it's understood is that how do we actually stop the burning? Well, one of the way we stop the burning is by not, but the flame, the fire, is by not feeding the fire. If you have a chimney and you do a fire, if you stop putting logs in there, the fire will disappear. So I was very much puzzled because that image of the fire reminded me of the fact that someone is putting the log in there for the desire, for the craving to happen. And I, it was an act of total volition, total, I knew what I was doing by going to that street. I knew I would be tempted. And it was almost a joke before going there. I knew that something like that might happen, and yet I still went there. I managed to somehow escape from it without too much damage, though I was extremely in a state of drunkenness. And I really needed to a while to recover from that experience. Another teaching for me that happened there is that afterwards I told the story to Delphine. And her first reaction was not at all what I had expected. Her first reaction was, "Well, why didn't you get it?" And she was trying to find solutions or arguments for me to actually get it. So I was very puzzled because I totally acknowledged that I had projected something that was just my projection. I attributed her intentions that weren't her intentions. I spoke for herself, and maybe more cruelly, she was playing the role of, I was, I don't know what, role she was. Well, not a nice role, let's put it that way. Not a nice role. It was just my imagination. And as during the seminar we were talking about Mara, and I looked it up today again, and it really struck me. You know how Mara visits Shakyamuni on the day of during the night of his awakening and tempts him with all in all kinds of ways, and Mara and Shakyamuni ends up defeating him. And he ends up defeating him, actually, if I remember correctly, by the text says something like by throwing a stone on the cold pot of clay. Instead, he destroys the fire by something cold. He conquers Mara, not by pushing him away, but by acknowledging who that figure is and say yes to that. But what really struck me, two things that struck me. Once is that it's a conversation. He's talking with Mara. He has interactions, he have dialogues with Mara. I had a big internal dialogue with all the forces inside me. He's pushing it away, not by denying it, but by recognizing it and talking to those forces. And the second thing that struck me, when I read again this Mahaparinibbana Sutta, by the end of the last days of the Buddha, Mara still comes back. It's not because Shakyamuni has conquered Mara during the day of his enlightenment that he's gone forever. He keeps having a conversation, and Mara comes back to the very last day. And he's really saying to him, maybe it's time to die. And Shakyamuni says, don't worry, time will come. But he insists. He says, but you said that you will die when you'll have perfect monks and everything is taken care of, and now that's it. You have students and they've understood and all that. And he argues, Mara argues with Shakyamuni. And Shakyamuni is like, yeah, don't worry, in due time, I'll be gone, don't worry. So it never stops. And it's an endless conversation with these forces. And what is also very much inspiring for me is that notion of nirvana or nibbana goes back to these. So we made it into like this extreme state and all that, but it has to do with the extinction. With the fact that it's become actually the word, I looked it up today, and it had to do with forgot, I don't have it here, like woodless. It doesn't have any wood. So it's not burning, it's the extinction. And it's really this image that the fire ends. And so that's also the figure of reactivity, that it ends. We're not blowing on the fire. It's becoming cold. And because of that, we're moving from a sense of reactivity, a sense of drunkenness, a sense of being lost to something much that has to do with collectedness, mindfulness, care. So going back to the care is the path to the deathless in the Dhammapada. Carelessness is the path to death. Care is the path to the deathless, to that sense of a space of non-reactivity. The opposite, carelessness, drunkenness, that's the fire. And that's the path to death. That's the path, death in the sense of we're stuck. It's burning, we're stuck. And when I was in the shop, it was so there was this feeling of being drunk and also this feeling of being lost in a choice, like not knowing what should I do, a great doubt. But this is not the great doubt, like opening up to the question. It was like more, what should I do? What should I do? What should I do? And in there was a total sense of paralysis also. And so, again, that made me think of afterwards, that really, when I started to digest this experience, that made me think of one of the hindrances is precisely this doubt, not the great doubt, the opening up to the big question, the not knowing, but really being paralyzed by not knowing what to do. And I left. Not because I really fully consciously took the decision of not buying it, but not buying the guitar, but just because I felt so paralyzed and so drunk that I just left. I do not know what the appropriate answer should have been in terms of buying or not buying, but the point was that it was about experiencing the turmoil that was created by the craving, the total sense of not being grounded anymore. And so I sat very much on that experience over the past few days, what happened in there, and one of the key teaching for me was also going back to this idea that we really set up conditions for ourselves, for our practice, for the cultivation of certain aspects of our life that we cherish. And we are really responsible for maintaining these conditions. And at the same time, I was reflecting on the fact that, we might want to create condition for ourselves to feel peaceful, to feel grounded, to feel comfortable, happy, and all that. And we might create conditions to try to avoid all possible sufferings so that we create a space that is safe. And to which extent Then we kind of cut ourselves away from life itself, from the suffering of life, from to which extent should we watch the news and be obsessed by climate change, for example? To which extent is it wholesome to be informed and respond to what is happening? And to which extent should we feel, should we let things in and feel invaded? And I find it's a very, it's an ongoing process, and it requires a lot of discernment, I feel. And it's really, I feel that it's really not easy. So there were a lot in this very personal experience for me. I don't know if it resonated with you at any level, even if you're not a fan of guitars. If I'll stop here for the moment and open it up to anyone who would like to say something. Yeah, Carla.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi.
Sorry, I
following the story from the beginning, so I didn't understand. I feel I'm missing something important from your story because I was late. Sorry. Can you tell the beginning of the story?
When did you from which point did you get it?
Well, I feel I'm missing your personal experience
Oh,
that lead you to those reflections.
the personal experience is when
It's something about the guitar. I
right, going to a
understand.
guitar shop, going to a
Thank
guitar shop and trying a guitar that I liked,
you. Okay.
right, a rare guitar.
And it was expensive.
It was reasonably expensive. Yeah, it was, yeah.
And you didn't buy it.
I didn't buy it. I resisted. Or I don't know, I postponed it maybe. I don't know.
Thank you. And the other question, it's about the meaning of caring in this contest. What is the precise meaning of care?
Care?
Care, yes.
Well, care is really this quality or this faculty of quality of Amapada that is translated often as diligence, but more it's probably care is a better translation. Is really the quality that incorporates all the other qualities, because in there are several passages in Buddhist texts where the Buddha says that it's really kind of the one that includes all the others, and it's like an elephant footprint in which all the other qualities like equanimity and all that is. So when we think about diligence, we might think like kind of more with has to do with mindfulness, attention, and these type of things, but it's really also a sense of opening up to when to a relational quality also towards oneself, but also towards others. think about, yeah, expressions when in English when we say take care. There's this sense of yes, be mindful with yourself, but really just be protective, be benevolent with yourself, yeah, and with others by extension. So it's a very important, this apamada is a very important quality that is being talked of.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, João.
Good evening, everyone. In the end, you were talking about conditions, the conditions, and making so that we have the appropriate conditions, which are that we feel are more helpful or more beneficial. And many times I think we tend to think about physical conditions, material conditions, about places or people, but what came up for me was actually for instance, paying attention to my willingness to let's say something that needs to be done, be it work or whatever, and for some reason something that I don't feel like doing. And I feel that paying attention to it's not about paying attention to the willingness to do that or to not do that, but the willingness to look at that resistance more than anything else. And that also makes a difference in what I also think of as conditions, in internal conditions, we might call them. Because I feel that that can also be cultivated, and it can grow inside you. The willingness to look at, you know, some stuff that sometimes is not really pleasant to look at, and it's difficult, no, I really don't want to, you see. And I feel that also that we are also talking about conditions when we talk.
Yeah,
about
the willingness to be mindful is a very is a wholesome condition, I would say. You know, that's if you're not willing to be mindful, well, it's not going to happen. There's a chance it's not really going to happen if there is no willingness. And also, one might, I don't know, I will start to talk about in my case. I know that having it being part of a sangha helps me to act on this willingness to be mindful. Right. That's also being part of a sangha for me is a helpful, is a wholesome condition that helps me to be mindful. So the willingness is one thing, but also how do we, you know, what is it that we need? I couple of weeks ago, I mentioned that to some of you. I was speaking with a friend, and we were both struggling with our creative work, not able to just really do it. And we both have a very strong will to do it. And we were looking actually at some point in the conversation. It just came up like that. What do we need for us to be able to do it? And I realized for me that my writing work, my creative writing work, really for me the best time is really very early in the morning. So if I don't wake up really early in the morning, usually it's not happening. And I kind of, by just saying that, I realized this is the condition I need to do it. And so the next day I thought, well, you know, just put the alarm at 6 and that's it. And it, the first couple of days it was difficult to get up, and then I was back on track. So that was my wholesome condition. Yeah. So there's this, the willingness, and also, you know, going also to, that's definitely a wholesome condition, but what are the other wholesome conditions that we need? The discipline, certainly, and I mean, and it's very, I guess it's also very different for each of us. Also, what are the conditions that we, you know, we talked about Debbie about sleep. Being sleep deprived is terrible. Nothing really good comes out of being sleep deprived. or other factors that are not very inducive to being mindful or to engage actively in this path. And if we are too worried with our material conditions, maybe it's difficult to think about something else. I feel for me there is a great it really really speaks to me this emphasis that is given in the Buddhist teachings about causality, conditionality, because it's really putting the light on how things depend on other things. That doesn't mean that everything is stuck. It just means that, well, now what do we do with that? What's our situation? What are the conditions? What are the various basic facts of our lives that are going to produce certain effects? And what can we change? What can we do with that? What can we, and from that on, you create other conditions. I found that very engaging. Yeah, Freddy?
Hello, everybody. Maybe I have a fun story about an encounter of Buddha and Mara. One day, Mara went to see the Buddha. And Ananda, his faithful servant, he saw Mara and he said, "No, this guy is not going to enter and see the Buddha. He's been defeated. You really, I don't understand this guy. Why is he coming again and again?" And the Buddha saw Ananda agitated and said, what's happening? He said, oh, Mara is over there. He wants to see you. He wants to talk to you. I don't want him to talk to you. The Buddha said, oh, let him come. Let him come inside. He has to come. He has to talk with me. So there's no problem. Mara, come, come. So it take Mara like a friend. Come over here. Sit. Please, Ananda, do a tea for our guest. Please. And Ananda is depitated. Why is Buddha so nice with this guy? This guy is bad. He's evil. Maybe I should spit in his tea or anything. He's like he's mad. And so the Buddha is talking with Mara. And Mara is very sad. He's depressed. He said, I don't understand. All my disciples, they want to be bhikkhus. They want to be a Buddha like you. They're all fleeing. I don't understand. Because of you, you are taking everything from me. You know what? We should swap. I should become the Buddha and you should become Mara. I'm fed up. The world is upside down. I don't understand anything. And the Buddha is coming. Please calm down. Calm down. Look at me. They are building temples. They are building statues of me. Do you think I told them to do that? No. That's the way things are. So calm down, calm down. So it's another story with the Buddha and Mara. And Mara is all our urges or difficulties. You have to connect with them. You have to be nice with them. And the Buddha is nice with Mara.
Yeah, thank you for this another story of Mara and Shakyamuni. And again, it's beautiful how it's a conversation. You know, how do we deal with our negative forces, you know, or what we think are as our negative forces? Can we engage in a conversation with that, and can we just stand clear without being intoxicated? And that's how we defeat it. Yes, you.
I think this fire is also beautiful. It's also this desire that you have so strong, it's also very beautiful for me. It's something that exists, and when you can recognize that and not to bring that to extreme where you make something wrong, it's also a condition, perhaps.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having desires, and desires are part of our life. The problem. The problem is when it becomes an intoxication, an addiction, something that turns into a repetitive habit that you feel is destructive, unwholesome for yourself, unbeneficial. Okay. The fact of desire of life is, you know, that's part of life. But it, you know, the what I experienced, like, that was one example of, and actually, you know, this thing of the cycle of birth and death and all that in Buddhism, it's really this image of this infernal circle. We're trapped into something that we can't get out of. And that's, in a way, you know, I think we can relate to that if we think of addiction, for example, habitual patterns, you know. And we go back and back into the same mechanism, destructive mechanism. Yeah. I think we can understand how it's we're becoming trapped in this. It's becoming something like a death. A fun fact is that reactivity is the anagram for creativity. And it's nice to kind of remember, if we think of what's the opposite of reactivity, you know, it's creativity, when it's becoming creative. So it makes me feel, going back to the example of the guitar, when we're actually there with Freddy and Thomas and Joao, and we talk about how we can become creative with that instrument. It's very joyful and very, it has to do with something very wholesome and positive, right?
When there it becomes you something. Have support, you are not alone in your fire, and you can share this fire with others and.
But it's the fire of creativity, which is not something cyclical, something that can be really destructive, right? I feel there's a real, but we should, you know, there's nothing wrong with desires, and really that's part of life, and let's just enjoy it.
Yeah, it was okay, the question from Delphine.
Yeah. And it wasn't like I shouldn't ever get it, you know, but there was something that was paralyzing, that puts me in a state of,
you feel like that.
Right. It doesn't have to be that way. Stefan? You're muted.
Okay, so first of all, thank you for this talk. I think it's really wonderful talk and motivates me enormously. So thank you very much for that. I wanted to say something. It came up first when you talked and then again now when Freddie was talking. It's like Mara is not someone else. Mara is not outside of the Buddha. Mara is the Buddha. And it's the Buddha mind is the mind that can choose the conditioning, but there is no Mara who comes in and disturbs us and takes us into problems. We are Mara and we are the Buddha because we are the ones who are choosing the conditions that are wholesome or not. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's just a literary figure, and it's a way to talk about it and to make it more fun and more readable. But yes, definitely, and this is why he's not excluding it, because he recognizes it as part of himself. And that reminds me of a koan that we have in Zen, which is, delusion is enlightenment. So that's really staying with that sense of confusion and delusion and recognizing it, that it's really part of it. That's the awakening. Yeah, Freddy.
Still, when you're drunk, it's difficult to drive. When you're drunk, you can not walk in a straight line. You know you're drunk. And you cannot walk in a straight line. Even if you know you're drunk, you cannot. You're drunk.
But who drank?
Roshi, what's the, what is, how, for Jukai, the precept on intoxication, what is it? Do you remember the way it's formulated?
My vow to be, to refrain from being intoxicated. Suddenly now I've drawn a blank. But it's the notion of being intoxicated even by one's identity to self, you know, to be intoxicated by any deluded, by delusion. Mm. Vow to be, refrain from being deluded is the idea.
So, yeah, it's very, you know, it's great that we find that that back again, you know, in our, in, and, but again, it's funny how, you know, we say we've had to refrain from being intoxicated and, or taking intoxicated substances or whatever, being intoxicated. So really, what would be the opposite in terms of what we want to cultivate if we do not want to be intoxicated? So that sense of diligence or that sense of care, that sense of collectedness, that sense of mindfulness, that sense of, yes, as Freddy says, when we're intoxicated, it's difficult to walk, it's difficult to do anything, it's difficult to be there, present. And so, you know, how do we want to live our life? Is being intoxicated with oneself also, leads to a flourishing life or not? And at the same time, but at the same time, delusion is enlightenment. Yeah, but delusion is not being intoxicated. Yeah, Christine?
Yeah, just really quickly, because we are almost out of time. I think everyone can relate to this guitar story because that's something easily that happens easily, which is also a bit the state of overwhelm, you know. I think you really enjoyed just walking through these doors, and then, but as soon as you saw this one guitar and you thought maybe I could buy it, and then you saw the other ones, but maybe those are good too, I should try. You know, that we all have this little voice in us to find the best. If we want to buy something, we have to find the best. And I once came across a book that dealt with that question, that we all have this drive to, or you know, wanting to find the best, and that even a simple food store can become overwhelming if you look at all the different cookie boxes or whatever, and you want to find the best cookie or whatever. And yeah, it helps to say I'm not obliged to find the best choice, to make the best choice, or to have another structure, like, you know, I no more new guitars or whatever, but getting in this whirlpool of trying so much different things and having to make a choice. I can totally identify with what you felt and why you had to leave the store.
And it wasn't just the best. I ended up wanting them all.
Oh, yes.
I wish I could have left the store with like 25 guitars. They had amazing stuff. Unbelievable. Old stuff, just stuff that I had never seen anywhere else. And Unbelievable. Yeah. So, yeah, Stefan, and then we'll end. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, that brings up something that is totally un-Zen, but nevertheless, the story of Ulysses. When he comes on his boat to the sirens, he tells all his staff that they should put wax in the ears not to hear, but he wants to hear. But he asks them to tie him to the mast so that he will not act and react. And I feel like this is what you did in this guitar street. You tied yourself to the mast of Buddhism. And you still wanted to hear it.
Absolutely. It saved me. Actually, I think this is what you wrote, right? Oh, I don't know if it's Juan or Thomas who sent me like that, you know, like I defeated Mara or something. I managed to survive this Denmark street. Yeah. But yes, and it's, that's also a very good image. And I think this is really what mindfulness is. That's the pole on which we, and the practice is really the pole on which we stick ourselves in order to bear witness to what is happening. And even when craving desires are surging, well, we just bear witness to that and we say yes to it. And yet we can still go out of the store without having indulged ourselves in all these things. All right, thank you.